What's going on, guys? It's JP from The Double Double, and I'm here with my co-host, Ben.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome.
And today we have a funny little episode where we're going to tell you what we were right about and what we were wrong about, either coming into the season or just takes that we've said along the way. I'm going to open this one up with the Minnesota Timberwolves. Me and Ben argued plenty over the summertime about what the Timberwolves should do with their lineup. Obviously, Karl-Anthony Towns and Rudy Gobert were not the cleanest pairing last year. I believe it led to a 5-game series against Denver. They lost in the first round. Obviously, not really a super successful season. But I was adamant that they should keep the two big guys together. Anthony Edwards was going to ascend to stardom. It looks like he's going to be like probably second team All-NBA. I thought he may even garner some MVP votes. And I thought they were going to be really freaking good, and they're really freaking good. So I'd like to pat myself on the back there.
And absolutely you should, man. I have been on the get Karl-Anthony Towns out of Minnesota train for a while now. And I didn't see this coming, how effective it was with Kat and Rudy Gobert. And the fact that Kat was able to, you know, shrink his role offensively and accept some games you need me to take 8 shots, some games you need me to take 12 shots, that's fine. Because we got guys who can shoot. I think that change for Kat was something that I didn't really expect. And the fact that just defensively, it wasn't nightmarish having them two on the floor at the same time. They're the number one defense in basketball. And it makes sense when you look at some of the other guys they have around them. Jade McDaniels, Rudy, and Ant all on the floor at once is nasty. But I just thought Kat was going to be such a weight slowing them down defensively.
Yeah, and he had a track record of not being an awesome playoff player and just kind of a pants pooper and a guy that might not be the best, like, chemistry guy for a team, like a little out there personality-wise. But this year, everything gelled for them, and they are leagues better than the next best defense in the league this entire season. Gobert has revitalized his career after what we thought was kind of his sign of, you know, slowing down last year. That season, he played very poorly, and now he looks great again. But just this unit together, it's odd how well they fit together, especially in a league where you're going up against a guy in Jokic who is, like, undoubtedly the best player in the league. How do you guard that guy? You need 7-footers. They're just riddled with size. You got Jaden McDaniels, who's 6'11", Karl-Anthony Towns, 7-foot, Rudy Gobert, 7-foot. You got Naz Reid coming off the bench, who's a 7-footer. They have options. I really, really liked that kind of philosophy, and that's what I kind of held on to. So I'm glad that things worked out for them this year and they're having a good year.
Yeah, man. Ant, too, man. We had the conversation about him getting MVP votes, being a first-team All-NBA guy, being like a, you know, top 7-ish player and being in that conversation. It hasn't happened yet. But when you go and look year to year at, you know, eye test or the stats for how Ant has improved, it's coming. It's only a matter of time before he is in that stratosphere for good, man. 26, 5-5 is what he's averaging this year. And you see it in spurts, but when he gets locked in defensively, it is insane. He had a play against Paul George the other day, just absolutely putting clamps on him. Better than, you know, most guys in the league can. He's locked in like that for the playoffs. The Timberwolves are going to be scary.
Yeah. I echo everything you just said. Ant and spurts looks like the best defender in the league, which is hilarious. Obviously, he doesn't do that every single night, but in the playoffs, you definitely see it more regularly. And when you have Jaden McDaniels, who's borderline All-NBA, Anthony Edwards, borderline All-NBA, and then Rudy Gobert, who will win the Defensive Player of the Year award this year, I mean, that's a very hard defense to score points against, and we've seen it give issues to the best teams in the league, like the Celtics and the Thunder. So I'm definitely looking forward to watching Mini in the playoffs.
Yeah, man, it's such a bummer that Kat's not going to be around for it, most likely, because this was, I think they were going to prove themselves as a, I don't really care what you think, this is going to work, we can win these games sort of team. Despite the awkwardness of the offense, I don't know, man. Just some of their big time wins they've had this year really made me confident in them as a team that could, like, really do some serious playoff damage.
Yeah, and they're led by the right guy. If you're looking for a guy with the right temperament to go surprise some people, it's freaking Anthony Edwards. So can't wait to see that guy in big moments. Ben, what was something that you were right about coming into the season?
I think, you know, both of us can do the rookie thing, so I'll start with mine. I'm going to go just Keyonte George to the Jazz. Yeah. I have had a lot of strong opinions about a lot of rookies, and we can definitely revisit a couple of them, you know, because I'm not 100%, I'm going to be honest. But Keyonte George becoming an all-star, it's going to happen. I don't know how many 25-point games he's had just in the last, like, month and a half of basketball. But he has emerged as a, he's become so much more efficient through the second half of the year. And the playmaking has been promising, man. So promising. I think this dude's going to be a starter going forward for the Jazz. And I think, you know, third year, absolutely we could see him making an all-star game.
Yeah, you were spot on with him. I had a lot of worries about him. When I was watching my Baylor tape of his, I just kind of saw a guy that could hit these insane hot streaks and really kind of take over games. But I saw a guy that took a lot of ill-advised shots. I saw a guy with tunnel vision. I saw a guy with ego and kind of like superstardom. Like, he loved having the ball as much as he could. And those players I usually steer clear of, right? He kind of reminded me of Jordan Clarkson earlier in his career. I didn't want to see the vision. What I think you were, you know, locked in on is at his peak, he is a special basket maker, right? Like, when this guy is locked in, there really is nothing you can do to defend him. He's playing defense against himself. And there are only a few guys like that in the league where it really doesn't matter who's defending them. So if he continues to grow as a playmaker, I think your all-star prediction for him is going to look pretty wise.
Yeah, man. He is one of those guys that takes ill-advised shots. He absolutely is. His efficiency was terrible at Baylor. His efficiency wasn't great to start the year. I'm not sure where the numbers are at now. But I think we've seen an improvement in shot selection from him to where a lot of those garbage shot attempts have kind of just found their way out of his diet of shot taking. But just, you're right, as a shot maker, man, he hit 9 threes against the Warriors this year. 5-9 in a handful of games, 5-8 in a handful of games. Just the way that he can catch fire from the perimeter, I love. And just the burst that he has getting to the basket, I think is going to make him just an excellent all-around scorer.
He's just unafraid, too. Like, as a rookie, he feels pretty comfortable in these big-time spots, and that's always a good sign where you're handing a rookie the ball to finish games for you sometimes, and he has no quarrels about it. I think your take on Keyonte George is looking like a pretty smart one right now, for sure.
I think so too, man. I mean, the Jazz are not a great team right now, but the fact that they've kind of given him the Jordan Clarkson role, plus you're going to play make a little extra for us, and the fact that he's been able to fill out that role, I think is excellent. Let's talk about the guy that you were the most right about, Brandon Miller.
Yeah, we love talking about these two guys because they're so much fun, but everyone and their mother after Summer League thought Brandon Miller was a horrible pick. And I was quick to remind people that he was probably the best perimeter prospect I've ever evaluated. This guy was scoring 20 points per game for Alabama, freaking 99th percentile three-point shooter in every single facet of three-point shooting, off dribble, catch and shoot, off pick and roll, movement, whatever it took, that guy was going to make his threes. And he did it in the face of pressure, too. I know this isn't something to be bragging about, but he was in some legal trouble. And in a game where people were chanting murderer at him, he scored 41. This guy is immune to pressure. He's just a killer. Like, he is an unbelievable basketball player. And for people to give up on him so quickly was really, really stupid. And I wanted to make sure people knew that.
He has been so good this year, man. I mean, especially since February 1st and beyond, he's been incredible. But throughout this whole year, we've seen just amazing offensive stuff from him. I'm really impressed with his ball handling ability. He got some kind of unfair comparisons to Jabari Smith when the season started. It was dumb. You know, Brandon Miller didn't have the best handle in college basketball, but it was nowhere near the disadvantage that Jabari was. So a lot of people coming into this rookie year just kind of expected him to be a catch and shoot, stand in the corner kind of guy. Yeah. And he has shown the ability to do so much with the ball in his hands. I think we may never see him as like an incredible playmaking kind of wing, but as one of the best hired guns out there, I think Brandon Miller will fill that role pretty quickly.
Yeah, I can see him getting to 5 assists at some point in his career. And there was just like blasphemous talks happening in Summer League, like not a top 10 pick. Like, you're just not watching is basically what I had to come to the conclusion of when I was watching all the Twitter takes and all the TikTok takes of, oh, he had 13 fouls tonight. Yeah, did you watch what he did in college? Like, the guy was unbelievable in college as a player, like defensively, offensively, a leader, just like whatever you wanted to say about Brandon Miller, he was that guy in college. So I didn't waver from my confidence in him, and I'm glad I didn't, because that dude is the second best rookie behind Wemby.
Yeah, man. And I think that is even something that was not something anyone could have expected coming into this year. Even, you know, you as a Brandon Miller fan, me as someone who recognized he was an excellent player, I thought there was going to be genuine competition for that number two spot between him and Scoot. And I thought Scoot was going to get the better hand. Clearly, that has not happened. Brandon Miller is, I don't know, man, it'll be a while before we do a redraft of the 2023 draft and Brandon Miller goes anywhere lower than two. What do you think about his all-star chances?
Very high, like basically a lock in my eyes. Yeah. I think I said it like two podcasts ago. That's low end for me now with him, just an all-star. Like I do think there's some all-NBA teams in his future. Because the path I see to him becoming an all-NBA player is just putting on some weight and finishing around the rim slightly better and getting some free throw attempts.
And that just comes with time. That just comes with age and time, man.
Right. So in terms of Brandon Miller, I'm as most confident as I could be. When it comes to Scoot, which we were both wrong about, I mean, I want to give it to like halfway through next year. I'm not sure you could have a worse rookie season. I'm really not sure. This is historically dog shit from Scoot, and I'm worried. I know you were more confident than me last time. My confidence has dipped further. I don't know where you stand, but we were wrong on Scoot Henderson, just as a rookie and maybe as a career.
Yeah, you can't say anything different. As a rookie, we were absolutely wrong. I thought this was a guy who was, you know, about as good for a all-rookie first-team lock as there is. And you know, looking at 13 points, 3 rebounds, 5 assists a game, some people might look at that and say, you know, maybe he is all rookie first team. I don't see it. The efficiency's terrible. 37% from the field, 30% from three. That is a big improvement as to how it started. I don't know, man. Scoot Henderson, we just haven't seen the highlights. We haven't seen the stuff from him. I feel like we talk about this every time. We haven't seen the stuff from him that separated him from everybody else when he was in the G League. There were moments from him getting up and dunking on people, the passing vision, the athleticism. There were so many moments that made you go like, oh yeah, this is a top three pick. This guy's insane. And if you didn't watch any of that, you've only seen Portland Trailblazers, Scoot Henderson, you don't know why he's drafted third, I don't think.
Yeah, you have no idea. You have no idea, which is really sad because he was super cool. Something else that I was dead wrong on was the Los Angeles Clippers. You can go back and listen to my live reaction of it. I was adamant this team would like lose in the play-in. I'm not sure why. I hate James Harden, and he's a professional pants pooper. I think he's played really well this year, but in general, he frustrates me. Having him join my favorite player of all time, Kawhi Leonard's team, and potentially sink his championship chances absolutely ruined me. They were off to an 0-6 start. Harden was horribly inefficient in those six games. The offense looked horrible. Kawhi's numbers tanked. Paul George's numbers tanked. Russell Westbrook was in the starting lineup because Ty Lue thought he was being cool. I was so down on it. Since then, the Clippers have bludgeoned the league, getting to fourth in the West. They've hit a slow patch recently with a lot of weird like injury stuff, and just like the three-point shooting's been gone for a little bit. But for them to make it to fourth in the West in a very crowded West was not something I expected at all.
No, not something I expected at all. And when you want to talk about things I did not expect, Kawhi Leonard being at 58 games played this year, Paul George being at 58 games played this year, that is not something I expected. You know, basically the king of load management himself, whether that's fair or not, man, I'm not sure it is, because Kawhi's dealt with so many injuries. But the fact that he's been able to play so many games and be as effective as he has in those games makes me really, really excited for the playoffs. He's dealing with weird back spasm stuff now, which is literally the worst time that he could be dealing with this. But if it clears up for the playoffs and this team's healthy, they're absolutely a major threat.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Kawhi Leonard, I've said it before, for a stretch there, he was the fourth or third best player in the entire league. I think he's dropped down a few spots, some more inconsistency has come along, like right before the All-Star break to right now, and now he's dealing with some stuff injury-wise. So, I mean, but at his peak, I mean, he seems like a worthy opponent of some of the best players in the league to outperform them in a playoff series. If he has James Harden and Paul George as his sidekicks, like, I like that bargain.
Yeah, man. Especially considering what the Timberwolves are dealing with no Cat. I think I'm taking a fully healthy Clippers over a Timberwolves with no Cat.
Yeah, me too. I think Phoenix, Denver, and Clippers, like, those three teams will be going at each other's throats. SGA, of course, and the Thunder as well. But, like, I'm taking an experienced Kawhi Leonard over a young OKC team. I'm taking the Clippers over the Suns as well. It's really just Denver. Denver is the issue, right? But Denver's the issue for everyone. So that's not an indictment on the Clippers. I didn't see the Clippers potentially making a Western Conference Finals at all. I saw their season ending shortly. So I was way wrong.
And I was way wrong as well. I want to talk about one guy that I am still holding out hope for, but I think it's fair to say that my assessment of him going into the season was wrong. Number six pick for the Magic, Anthony Black.
Here we go.
I love Anthony Black, man. I think he's going to be one of the better defenders from this class. I love the way he is as a connective player. I love what he can do. But his offense is not there, and he was drafted to a Magic team that needed shooting. And so that's why when you bring in a guy like Markelle Fultz, who knows how to run an offense, who knows what he's doing when the ball's in his hands, a guy like Anthony Black gets phased out. I loved what I saw from him in the 30 starts, but I expected a all-rookie lock. And 5 points a game on 18 minutes a game, that is not an all-rookie lock.
No, you can go back, and this is where I was right on something. You can go back to our TikTok on grading lottery picks, and I commented on our own TikTok, Anthony Black pick was buns. I hated it from basically the beginning. I thought it was the worst offseason by any team in the league with the Orlando Magic. We had a brief debate before the pod even started, but like, incompetence everywhere. The Anthony Black pick was stupid. The Jet Howard pick, stupid. Passing up on Fred VanVleet in free agency, dumb as fuck. They wanted to, for whatever reason, waste this season or make it more difficult on their star players. I'm not really sure what the motivation between all three decisions were, but this was something I nailed. They are dead last in three-point shots made this year. Coming into the year, we all knew what was the Magic's weakness, three-point shooting. They did nothing to address it. It's organizational incompetence from Orlando.
I wanted them to draft Keontae George at 6. You wanted them to draft Grady Dick at 6. Either way, they would have been left with a better three-point shooter. And yeah. Now I think Anthony Black is going to be the better player between him and Grady Dick. I think it's going to be Anthony Black that ends up the better player. But when you talk about just the garbage fit with this team, they didn't need another connective playmaker who can't shoot. I love what Anthony Black brings. I think eventually he'll be probably a starter for this team, probably a good starter for this team. But if you wanted a good team this year, if you wanted the Magic to be really good right now, definitely taking Anthony Black wasn't the right choice.
Yeah, and I'm not as sure as you are about Anthony Black being better than Grady Dick long term. So as a guy that I'm not like super bullish on his future, and I'm definitely not bullish on his present, like that frustrates me greatly. And you can go back to our like initial mock drafts. I was pounding the fucking table for Grady Dick at 6 and then Jordan Hawkins at 11. And both of those guys turned out to be exactly what I thought they'd be, which are good NBA three-point shooters. The Keontae George pick would have been a home run. That was your first ever mock draft, was Keontae George to the Magic. So that would have been fantastic too. But there's a common thread here, right? Which is go address shooting at the guard position specifically. And they just ignored it completely. So this is very pessimistic for a team that's either fourth or fifth. I believe they're fourth right now in the East. Fifth. Okay, excuse me. They have an unbelievable defense, but they are the fake good team to me, right? Where they have a lot of good players. They have a great defense. Come playoff time, that team's getting fucked up. They cannot score the basketball. So they will be ushered out of the playoffs. I think they could have done a better job this year with surrounding their star guys with three-point shooting and talent.
And our outlook on this team is where we differ. I think, you know, seeing that Anthony Black can be a 39.5% three-point shooter this year, sure, it is on garbage attempts. It is on no volume. But for a guy who could not shoot in college, to me, that says, hey, this guy could be a good shooter next year. This guy could be a good shooter 2 years from now. This could be a legitimate part of the offense. It's not there yet. And any complaint about you didn't do enough this year, given Mo Wagner an extension, given Joe Ingles a contract, that wasn't big enough steps. That is nothing you can say about that. But I am still bullish on Anthony Black, and I think that's really what separates us. Because the Magic are good this year, man.
Magic are good this year. They could have been better. That's what frustrates me, is I saw it immediately. I said, all right, this is the key to fixing the team, and they ignored it. So that is where we differ. Because they are good right now. They should be better, but their organization kind of held their money in their hands instead of, you know, taking some risks.
Let's do another rookie. Your favorite guy, a guy that I think we were on 5 months before the draft, Derek Lively. Conversations between me and you about whether or not this guy is a basketball player, let alone an NBA player. You know, what kind of guys do you want? Like, is he better than Bismack Biyombo? That was all nonsense. Derek Lively is an excellent defensive player. The fact that he is a zero on offense means nothing. And you were kind of spot on in your evaluation of him and what his role could be on the Mavs specifically.
Yeah, I tried converting you. You bucked me for a long time on him.
I really
did. And what's weird, too, is like the vision I had for him was to go to the Mavericks.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like, okay, Derek Lively's a top 12 player. It was Derek Lively should go 12 to the Magic. And I mean, the Mavericks, excuse me. And I was saying that months before the draft happened. It's happened. He's been great. I'm not like a super fan of Derek Lively, but we differed so greatly on our opinions of him. That's why I had to ride or die with him, because you weren't sure he was an NBA player. And I was telling you he was going to be a great defender. So we really were on opposite ends there.
It was the 10th pick at the time. Dallas hadn't traded down. So you were telling me Derek Lively's a top 10 pick. And I was seeing 5 rebounds and 5 points a game. I mean, I couldn't buy into it, man. But the defense that he brings, the rim rolling that he brings, he's got really good hands. Like, in terms of a center for the future for the Mavs, they really couldn't have gotten better than Derek Lively.
Yeah, you're right, which is awesome, because they are struggling to put talent around Luka. They've been struggling to put talent around Luka. It feels like this was like one move they can actually hang their hat on and say, like, hey, we did an okay job with this one.
Yeah, yeah. I want to go. I don't know how strong we went on this on the pod, but I know you fought me about Mikal Bridges being the most improved player off the pod. And what we've seen from him is that he's not a incredibly efficient number one option.
Yeah. What, because from what I understand, I was anti Mikal Bridges, right?
Yes. You were right, so, and I was wrong. Yes.
Okay. I just wanted you to say it. Mikal Bridges, I mean, we've learned, right? So this is the year that we have kind of understood this man's not a second option. He's definitely not a first. We learned that very quickly, but we're questioning, is this guy even a number two? I think he's a wildly valuable player as a guy who is an iron man, can shoot well from three and defend the other team's best player. But if you're expecting him to carry you to wins, that is not what's going to happen. I think there was a lot of optimism of him to be that 26 point per game scorer that everyone saw for the back half of the season last year after the Kevin Durant trade. You have to be a pretty special scorer to get to over 25 points per game. He is not that guy. He's a very good basketball player, but he is not the guy people wanted him to be.
You're right. And there's a kind of combo with that when we talked about him, which is like the packages that were being put together and offered for Mikal Bridges before we knew he was definitely not a number one option were right. crazy. And, you know, I don't know, man, the philosophy on like, do we dump this guy? Do we keep him and see? Like, it's obvious in hindsight which direction they should have chosen. We thought there should have been a fire sale for Brooklyn. Get rid of all of these guys, get as much value back as humanly possible. We were right about that.
Yeah, we definitely were right about that. Something I was very wrong about was Charlotte. We've talked a little bit about it already. I was fucking for sure this team was making the play-in tournament. They have 16 wins on the season. They are dog shit. I can make excuses. I should have known I was walking into what I was walking into, right? An inconsistent ball club with very injury-prone players that have never played winning basketball in their entire careers, most likely. Now, I'm not going to shy away from next year doing the same stupid take because I'm a blind believer. But I have to eat crow here. Charlotte is not nearly as good as I thought they were going to be.
No, man. And that wild inconsistency, that wild, you know, the lack of winning basketball, part of it's kind of led by their main guy, LaMelo Ball, only playing 22 games this year. That's not going to cut it. The Miles Bridges part of this equation is definitely an interesting one. The fact that he's like their guy, the fact that the number one option for the Hornets is someone that nobody wants to watch or cheer for. It's tough, man. We were right about Brandon Miller. You were right about Brandon Miller, and we could say that again, but like the effect that we thought that was going to have, or the effect that you thought that was going to have on the rest of the Hornets, we didn't end up seeing it. And honestly, man, who knows if LaMelo plays 60 games this year, what that looks like.
Yeah, who knows? But that's on me to understand. This dude gets hurt every year, and this dude's going to play a maximum of 35 games a season. So for me to put my blind faith in them and just say, they are going to prove people wrong, that was a little silly on my behalf.
Did we have a lot of faith in their rookies? Nick Smith Jr. Did you have any?
Oh, well, I don't know if people remember, but I was on here saying like he should have been a lottery pick. And then he ended up going like 29th or something, or maybe like early second.
Mm-hmm.
So I definitely am tainted Hornets blue a little bit. I'm pretty biased as a Brandon Miller supporter, a LaMelo Ball defender, and a Nick Smith high school basketball fan. So I had on the teal colored glasses for sure.
A little bit. A little bit. Let's do a double one. Hometown teams, or our favorite teams, Celtics and Cavs. We were 100% right on. If you go and listen to our Eastern Conference breakdown from whenever we did that, you know, I think anybody could have spotted that the Celtics were going to be one of the best teams basketball has seen in quite some time. But our takes were pretty spot on, man, about the Celtics, about the Cavs. These teams are exactly what we thought they were.
Yeah, it's really cool to listen to, guys. If you're interested in all, go listen to that Eastern Conference breakdown preseason. We photographed this shit mentally. We talked about how, and this is me too, and I'm glad I said it. Derek White, I've been a longtime supporter of. I think he's the best role player in the league. Shipping Marcus Smart out, you guys have heard it from me for years. I hated him. Getting him out and replacing him with Jrue Holiday, massive W. We've seen that come true. The Kristaps Porzingis trade, bombing threes from 35 feet away to make open driving lanes for Jaylen and Jason. Like, everything came true, and this team is bludgeoning the league, breaking records for net rating and all this shit. We nailed them as a regular season team. We knew the expectations for this team was to make it to either the Eastern Conference Finals or farther, and I think they're on that track, right? Like, I think it would be a disappointment of a season if they didn't make it past the Eastern Conference Finals. And then when it comes to my Cavs, I was, like, pleading people to understand how much of a difference these free agent signings were going to make for them when it came to George Niang and Max Strus. These guys chuck threes. The Cavs were a horrible three-point shooting team last year, not by percentage, but by attempts. And now with the increase of attempts, you have to respect their perimeter shooting with Sam Merrill as well. So that has opened up that offense, and now my team sits at three and your team sits at one. And both of us predicted them to be top three seeds, so we kind of nailed it.
Yeah, man. I don't think there's this thing that happens with Cleveland basketball where just nobody cares. Nobody knows why they're good. Nobody knows why they're bad. And so it's just filled with people making takes based on looking at stats and not actually watching basketball. And like, you know, so they don't really understand the difference that a guy like Max Strus makes to this team. A guy who is going to play 30 minutes a game, who can create for himself from the perimeter, can pass a little bit, tries his ass off on defense. Like, did the Cavs have a player who could do a little bit of all of that before? I don't really know. I don't know, man. But so the difference that he made is great. And then Dean Wade returning to form. You're the biggest Dean Wade supporter out there. Sam Merrill shooting. Like, of course this was going to make a difference. I think the one thing that we were wrong about was Evan Mobley's growth. And I'm not out on him, man. And I think it's all tied to him and Jared Allen sharing the floor together. I've been on the get Jared Allen out of here train for a minute. But I think we were wrong about him being like a fringe all-star.
Yeah, this is me. I gotta take responsibility with this one. What I thought was gonna be my crowning achievement of draft analysis turned out to be my biggest flop, which is pretty hilarious. Evan Mobley is a very good basketball player. Let's put it there first. But he is not what I thought he was gonna be. I thought he was gonna be Domantas Sabonis plus defensive player of the year. That is an all NBA player for his entire career. And Evan Mobley is not that. He's a good basketball player. I think a lot of teams would like him on their team. But now we're in the conversation of for what price? If you're great, it doesn't matter the price. With Evan Mobley, it matters how much he's getting paid. So we've entered kind of a weird stage with Evan Mobley where I expected him to be a fringe all-star. At least by this point, his third season, he dealt with a ton of injury this year. I mean, there's not a whole lot I can say about that, but just in terms of what he looked like before the injury, still wasn't a fan. So I'm not totally giving up. I have adjusted my expectations and my ceiling for him. I think an all-star is something he can still achieve in his career, but all NBA seems farther away and nearly impossible.
Yeah, and it's, to me, entirely limited by his drive to score, his aggressiveness scoring. Because the passing vision, you can't say anything about his ability to pass. You can't say anything negative. He's an incredible passer for a big man, for anybody. But it's the fact that nobody respects his shot that makes it a lot harder for him to find those openings in the first place. Anybody would rather sag off of Evan Mobley, try to do something, instead of letting him make an open pass. If he could be that killer of an offensive player, the passes open up and everything opens up. But it's just one of those things that we're getting farther and farther away from that, especially with the addition of offense that the Cavs have. It almost feels like Mobley's in this state where he's like, the ball would be better off being shot by someone else.
Yeah, and that mindset is a death to an offensive career.
Yes.
Once you have that mindset of it's better for me to give it up than take it myself, you are kind of cooked. So I'm getting worried of like Ben Simmons syndrome, honestly, with Evan Mobley, where it's like, hey dude, you're 7 foot tall, just go up with the fucking ball. We'll see, man. We'll see. I think moves have to be made financially pretty soon. I think a lot gets told by those moves, but we will see. Well, I'm going to keep riding with Evan Mobley, just maybe not to the same extent that I was when he first was drafted.
He's still an incredible player, and if you put that man alone as the starting center and you don't put another non-spacing big next to him, we're going to see different play from him, 100%.
Yeah. Something else that you were like on the forefront of was the Pacers coming into this season. You were very, very in support of their over. You convinced me, but like, just pat yourself on the back really quickly for the Pacers and like explain why you thought they were going to be so good.
Yeah, man, it really all comes down to Tyrese Haliburton. Him alone and the way that he runs an offense, and honestly just the collection of C plus to B players that they had, made me confident that like this is going to be an offense that just hums, that the pace is insane and the way they get shots up is insane. Because you saw last year, like Andrew Nembhard, a guy who was taken in the second round, immediately filled the role of like a Tyrese Haliburton B minus. As soon as that guy gets subbed out, you need a guard who can continue to run up the pace and take similar shots. He filled it immediately, man. I really thought was going to happen was Jairus Walker's emergence as an incredible rookie was going to move this Pacers team defensively. Ugh. And I'm still angry about it, man. I'm still upset that he's not getting the run he deserves. Because I thought that was really what was going to shake this team up. The offense we knew was going to be unstoppable. The defense is terrible. I kind of expected the defense to be terrible, but the collection of just adults in the room that they seem to have is really good for them.
Yeah, we're Jairus Walker defenders. I will stay on that ship. I don't give a shit that he's barely played in the NBA. We're just right. We're always right. It's just how much time do we need to be right, is our issue. But yeah, the Pacers have been really fun. I think something that I've more uniquely been on with the Tyrese Haliburton subject is the Domantas Sabonis Tyrese Haliburton take. I think I'm right. I think maybe other people think I'm wrong. Maybe you can be a judgment call here where I think that was a good move for Sacramento. A lot of people dislike that. Obviously, Tyrese Halliburton's going to make all NBA this year, most likely, and get paid a stupid amount of money once he does so. But I just feel like the Kings being moderately successful, guaranteed over the next 4 years while they have Fox and Sabonis locked up, is just as valuable as having a young superstar on a team with very little support around him. Like, I don't understand why it's viewed as like a fleecing. Like, maybe 6 years down the road, if Tyrese Halliburton's making Eastern Conference Finals over and over and over again, we'll look back and think that's silly. But like right now, the Kings are just flat out better than the Pacers.
You have to trade great players to get great players a lot of the time. You know, you weren't going to be able to get Domantas Sabonis for your team for nothing. You weren't going to be able to offer scraps. He's a great player. He made all NBA last year for a reason. He might make it again this year.
He will. He should.
He should. He absolutely should. So these guys are both excellent players, and they fit their new team so well. I don't know anybody who's being real with themselves. If you watch 17 years of playoffless basketball, any team that changes that made the right decisions.
Yes.
Like, I don't care if Tyrese Haliburton is maybe, you know, the 18th best player to Sabonis's 22nd or 24th. Like, I don't care at all. Yeah.
I'm glad we're on the same page as that, because like Indiana is two games behind the Kings' record, right? But Indiana, I think, is farther away from being something than the Kings are. Like, the Kings have two all-NBA caliber players on their team. I guess you can say the same thing with Pascal coming over to help Tyrese, but it just feels like the Pacers have like legitimate identity issues with being like the worst fucking defense in the league by a lot. And then the Kings aren't great either, but they have Keegan Murray on the up and up, becoming a better wing defender. It just feels like the Kings have put themselves in a position where they at least can be respectable. And I think that means they won the Haliburton trade, for at least right now.
I don't think either team got fleeced. I think either team is better because of the move. I think both teams are better because of the moves that they made. If we had to watch two or three more years of Sabonis and Miles Turner together, I was gonna lose it, man. That shit was not fun to watch. Sabonis on his own as a five with the offense they have, it's fun. That is fun. How that man should be playing. Both teams won that trade by far.
Something I was wrong about: Atlanta. After seeing Trae Young go nuclear against the Celtics in the first round, I just assumed a full season under Quinn Snyder, DeJounte Murray, hopefully Quinn Snyder can figure out that backcourt, and then just decent role players around everyone. That'll be a playoff team.
Dude, plus that sick rookie they drafted, Kobe Bufkin.
I'm still in on Kobe Bufkin, because he was playing really well in the G League, I swear. I'm still Kobe Bufkin over Cason Wallace. I want that on record.
Oh, I want that on record. Yeah.
I want that on record. Atlanta has not worked out the way I thought it would, which is unfortunate. I am a Trae Young defender compared to most people, I think. I think he's kind of been underrated in a weird way. But this team being six games under 500 and also having the 30th ranked defense in the league, that's just not what I expected. And I do anticipate someone to be on the move this summer because of how wrong I was.
I don't blame you, man. I mean, I expected them to be a lot more put together than they are right now. They've dealt with a lot of injuries, man. They really have throughout the year. But to be the 30th defense and the fact, well, they're 27th right now, but they're close. But the fact that it's like not really Trae Young's fault this time, he's definitely not a good defender, but man's trying. But somehow this team is just garbage from on defense. Bogdanovich is not a defender. They're just filled with a lot of guys who just don't play defense very well. And then DeAndre Hunter can't stay healthy, and he's kind of their most consistent wing defender. I'm upset about the way this is going, man, because it just makes that first round series against the Celtics look even more miserable from the Celtics end. The fact that they allowed a Trae Young heater like that, you know, with the way that they're going right now, it just looks worse.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought it up. Something I'm right about is Jason Tatum is not that guy. We have been avoiding this topic, and we're not going to talk about it too much, but I just want it on record because I've been dodging it. You don't even have to say anything to this, Ben, because I know you don't even want to partake in this idiocracy that's been going on in the internet, but this is something I've complained to you about for probably, what, I don't know, a year and a half, where I just feel like Tatum's entrenched in these conversations he does not belong in. I think, let me be clear, I think he's a wonderful player. I think he's first-team All-NBA, right? So this is a guy I have respect for as a basketball player. But the conversations we're putting him in are very, very stupid, and he doesn't belong there. And I think he proved me right last year. I think he'll prove me right again. Some of these games where not crunch time comes around, he's just not a guy I love taking that last shot. And I think when we start throwing him in conversations with Kevin Durant, LeBron James, Steph Curry, Jokic, Giannis, Luka, like, he does not belong there. He belongs with a different crop. So, I feel like as of late, I've been validated.
Not really. No, he won player of the month for February. And like that was the month where you were really going crazy with your Tatum is not that guy takes. I don't give a shit about four regular season games. I don't. Not from anybody.
Oh, no. No, just last year's playoffs. Yeah, we don't care about those either. But yeah, go.
Of course I care about those. But if you're talking about a guy who's All-NBA first team and All-NBA is positionless, you're talking about a guy who's having a top five season in the NBA this year and last year. To say that that guy doesn't fit among the crowd of top 12 people in the NBA makes me just annoyed. Like, he's a great player. We know what Jason Tatum is. We know what level of player he's at. And the fact that he played four garbage regular season games recently doesn't change anything about how I feel.
No, it's more of just the, you know, clanker against Denver again for the second time this season, just shitting away the game, the disappearing act he pulled. And he's not that guy, right? Like, when we're talking top 12, he's a top 12 player. Of course, he's a top 9 player. But what we're not going to do is throw him in conversations with Kawhi, Jokic, Giannis, SGA, Luka. That's where things get dumb. So that's kind of what I've been preaching for a while, is just he's a very good player. You're right. He'll be first team All-NBA. I support that. He will make my All-NBA team first team. But I think there is starting to be this mobilization of like, oh, that's not the guy you want taking the shot. And he's closer to Devin Booker than he is to Kawhi or Kevin Durant. So, and that's not disrespect, because I think Devin Booker's an All-NBA player. But I think the framing of the conversation around Jason Tatum is starting to lean my way rather than yours.
I don't know if that's even true, man. I mean, we looked at the Ringer's top 100. They got Jason Tatum above Kevin Durant and Devin Booker. And those guys are all within one place of each other. And that sounds about right to me, that all of those guys are about, you know, What is the it's difference just stupid, between though. The seventh best and the eighth best and the ninth
best? A lot.
Best? There's not a really lot. A big difference.
I think there's a canyon. That's where we disagree. I think there's a canyon. I think Kevin Durant being that eighth guy and Tatum being that ninth, there is a fucking vast difference between those two players in my mind, where it's like, okay, nut crunch time, who do I want? It's a no fucking brainer. I want Kevin Durant. You go supernova, come bring us home. And then Tatum's just that next step. And it's just stupid. Like, we can talk about the Ringer. I'm a huge Ringer fan. That's just stupid. What they've done is stupid, putting him over Kevin Durant. I think we did this off air like a few days ago, but I'll just read Kevin Durant's stats for everyone. 28.5 points per game on 53% from the floor, 43% from three, 85% from the free throw line, with 7 rebounds and 6 assists, while averaging a block and a half a game. To even like pretend like Jason Tatum's better than him is crazy. Like, if we put Kevin Durant on the Celtics, they get even better.
You know, man, there's a lot of people pretending this.
Who?
The Ringer.
The Ringer?
The Ringer, yeah.
That's it. And, okay.
Yeah, I mean...
The Ringer and you, and Mike Rugg, and Nate Moskowitz, and Jordan Poirier.
4 people in the world. Yep, that's how many people think Tatum belongs. Yeah,
yes. Okay. It's just getting silly, and I don't know how much more, like, shit we need to see from him to where we can... Because what frustrates me about this conversation, and I was validated with Westbrook, and it's happening all over again, is where we put these guys that are great NBA players, but we put them in conversations they don't belong in. There's just an overrated hype inflation, aura inflation with these guys that, like, they don't deserve it. Westbrook was probably the eighth best player, and when he won MVP on a team that was the eighth seed in the West, and then he had the worst playoff series of fucking history just right after. It's like, oh no shit, he's not that guy. I feel very similarly to Tatum, where, like I said, his team is a fucking juggernaut. That team is helping, like, keep him afloat. Joe Mazzulla, by the way, had an awesome quote the other day. He averaged 28-7-5. When Tyrese Maxey does that, he's fucking awesome. But when Tatum does that, he's shit. Dude, he was horrible. He was fucking, what was he, like 9 of 24 from the field or something. Let's just wait till Tatum proves us that he's a top 5 guy, top MVP contender. Can we wait until he does that, please, before we crown him as one?
Yeah, I mean, being fifth in MVP votes does not mean you were ever seriously in contention to win the award.
But why is ESPN plastering his face all over Twitter saying, why isn't Tatum number one in MVP? Because
they don't respect Jokic. This is the year after year after year, Jokic is the best, but let's find somebody else that we can try to paint. Tatum is the only American dude that's in, like, the top 4, top 5, top 7 conversation.
I think that's a fair point. I think... general media fucking hates Jokic, and that kind of needs to stop. But it's also disrespectful to SGA, Luka, Kevin. Like, there's just better options. But we'll wait for the playoffs. We'll go again. We'll do this again this year. It'll be a fun time. I love having this thing hanging over my head because it's all on record now. So if he's great in the playoffs, I'll have to come on here and apologize to all the Boston fans. And if he's horrible, we'll see.
We'll see, man. Regardless, he won't move. And, you know, maybe if he's amazing in the Celtics, you know, if he's terrible or amazing, he'll move up and down. If he's just about the player he's been, you know, I think we know who Tatum is. I think you have one view of him. You're a Tatum hater. I think you're proud to say that.
I believe Tatum's the 9th or 10th best player in the NBA. Does that qualify me as a hater?
Being a hater qualifies you as a hater.
But what about, I'm realistic.
That's hater shit, for sure.
What are you talking about? This guy has fucking flopped in the postseason over and over again. His numbers decrease every single postseason. He's the worst clutch star in the league. There's not competition. Him and James Harden are best buds. What are we doing, guys? Why are we trying to do this? Why are we trying to inflate this guy? Let's just all accept as a basketball community, He's either the 9th or 10th best player. Devin Booker easily has an argument to be better than him. And Jason Tatum easily has an argument to be better than Devin Booker. Those two guys are the same exact level. Why do we need to bring Kawhi into it? Why do we need to bring SGA into it?
Is that what it is? Kawhi Leonard's name got mentioned.
No, it's SGA, Luka, Kevin Durant, LeBron. Like, LeBron's better than Tatum as a 40-year-old.
I don't think you'd find a lot of people that agree with you on that one.
I think I should. That's what's bothering me. I think I should find people that agree with me. Because when nut crunch time comes, the final 5 minutes of a fourth quarter to win an important game, who's the guy I want? It's not fucking close.
No, it's definitely not for you.
No, it's not. And I'm shocked. Can you say on the record you'd rather have Jason Tatum over LeBron James in the final 5 minutes of a game?
No, man. LeBron James is the greatest basketball player of all time.
Then perfect. Well, what the fuck are we doing putting Tatum in these conversations? What the fuck are we doing?
I'm not participating in this Tatum rant. This is all you, man.
It's crazy. It's crazy. It drives me crazy. Boston media is so fucking annoying. First, it's the Marcus Smart is Defensive Player of the Year, and he actually won the fucking award. Oh, that's my stance.
All right. I hate this conversation more than anything, man. I think whether or not somebody's the 7th or 8th best basketball player out of 400-something, who gives a shit, man? They're all arguable. I do not care.
I just think it's disrespectful. That's all. I just think it's disrespectful to the guys that should not be in conversations with Jason Tatum.
But they are, man. If you're 7th to 8th to 9th, they are in the conversation. That's a top 10 list.
They shouldn't be. Jason Tatum's with Devin Booker and Anthony Davis and Jimmy Butler. That's his group. Okay? So, like, you can be in that group. Let's leave the guys who have championships and fucking historic playoff runs to themselves. Let's do that.
I'm going to let that take sit for itself. Let's go into let's find another thing. Because I don't care, man.
We'll wrap up on this last one. We'll find one quick. I think we were right on just the finals. I believe I said Bucks Nuggets. I'm not super comfortable with that. You said Celtics Nuggets. And I believe you had the Celtics winning.
Yeah.
You know, we're both pretty close. You obviously, I think your matchup will happen. Just as like an update, because we're kind of doing, how do you feel about those predictions? Obviously, we can't tell you guys if we're right or wrong yet, but how are you feeling about your Boston over Denver prediction?
I feel good about it, honestly. I mean, you know, you're looking at the standings, you're looking at what's happened in Minnesota, you're looking at the size issues in Oklahoma City. Denver is definitely the team that seems to be the one that's going to get to at least the Western Conference Finals, if not just the finals outright pretty easily. Yeah. Jamal Murray is returning to form in an excellent time, and Jokic is just maybe the best playoff player in the game. So I think they make their way to the finals pretty comfortably, and I think the Celtics make their way to the finals pretty comfortably. I think anything short of that from the Celtics, and I'm disappointed in what they have accomplished, basically. You know, the Knicks are awesome. And they're the team that looks like a hard-fought loss, but only in the sense that the 48 minutes are going to be difficult. The Celtics are the best team from start to finish, and they should be the team that wraps it up pretty quickly.
Yeah, I don't. We obviously did a Celtics thing the other day. They are the best team in the East. I think I'm wrong on that. My Milwaukee-Denver prediction, the Celtics will beat Milwaukee in whatever series they face. Damian Lillard continues to show he's a bum. Last night they lost by 30 something points to the Kings. Just a disgusting display after Giannis had a 30 point game. They are not on Boston's caliber whatsoever. Boston is in a tier of its own, and then Jokic is in a tier of his own, and that team surrounding him is perfectly crafted for postseason success. It's huge with Aaron Gordon sitting at 6'10, MPJ at 6'11. That team is built for a postseason run, and I lean Denver. I sent you this the other day. I love the Celtics team, and I know my Jason Tatum rant probably seems weird now that I'm saying this, but like, I love watching the Celtics. I love the way they move the ball. Their defense is outstanding. The three-point shooting's so fun to watch as well, but history has shown us over time, the title is almost as important as just like who has the best player on the best team. Two teams make it, you oftentimes look at the opposing sides and who has the best player. That team usually wins. Obviously, we have some weird cases with 2011 Dirk besting LeBron. We have some weird cases with Kevin Durant and Curry joining forces to take over LeBron. But if we're just doing like 1v1, like who's better, Jokic or anyone on the Celtics, that's a pretty easy conversation to have. So I'm going to lean with the Serbian.
Yeah, man. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. Jokic has proven himself through his finals run last year as just literally a one-of-a-kind playoff player. I don't think there's any problem rooting with the Nuggets over the Celtics. I don't think there's any, it's nothing, there's nothing crazy about that. Jamal Murray's amazing when the playoffs start. Jokic is amazing when the playoffs start. And the Celtics as a team are not the sort of people you trust when it's clutch time.
Right. And I think it's also just, we have an all-time player at his personal all-time peak. Those dudes are very difficult to stop when it comes to these huge moments, right? Like, we've seen it with LeBron. We've seen it with, you know, guys like Kevin Durant, even though he joined the Golden State Warriors. We saw it with Curry in 2022. Like, when those guys are at the absolute peak of their powers, they kind of just will themselves to championships. It's no disrespect towards the Celtics. Like, I think the Celtics are historically good. I just think team ball is harder to rely on than just the solar system that is Jokic.
Yeah, man. And when you're talking about, you know, all-time great players having all-time great peaks, Giannis is still doing amazing shit right now. He's still, if the season ended today, he'd be the first person in NBA history to average over 30 on 60% field goal percentage or better. He's still doing incredible shit. So I don't know, man. I saw some great playoff games from Dame Lillard. Can I just be delusional for a second, man?
Yeah.
That game against the Nuggets, the series against the Nuggets before he left Portland. Can I just be delusional and think maybe there's a chance that that comes back?
Yes, I'll let you do that. I would love to see that because I think a good Damian Lillard Giannis pairing versus the Celtics would be such a fun series to watch.
Absolutely.
I actually still think the Celtics come out on top, weirdly enough. But I think that would go seven. I think it would be great content for me and you to talk about. I'm just so out on Damian Lillard. Like, I'm probably the most out on Damian Lillard that I've heard in the media.
Yeah, man, because the numbers look fine. Bad for Dame Lillard standards, but, like, you wouldn't look at his stats and see all of these 10-point on 2 for 12 shooting or 4 of 18 shooting. It doesn't immediately pop out at you until you go and look. Because he's got some good games sprinkled in there, man. The win against the Clippers, he had 41. The other win against the Clippers, he had 35. Something about the Clippers, I guess.
Yeah.
But in those games, you see the pick and pop between him and Giannis, and you're like, this is what I've been waiting for literally the entire season.
Right.
But yeah, to think that like just those two games can be brought into the playoffs, that's why I'm out on the Bucks, and that's why I don't really talk about them. But yeah. Giannis is that dude. He is the get on my back, I'm going to do as much as I absolutely can to get this win kind of dude.
Yeah. Thank you guys for listening. I'm not sure if we have anything else to talk about. Ben, anything else?
I don't think so, man. Go Celtics. Go Tatum.
Go Tatum.
Peace out, everybody.
Peace.